Anyone have a first question?
I know he's got a few, Dave.
So yeah, Cody. Yeah, right. You're good. Go ahead. You can mic me up. All right, cool.
When did you first realize the power of organic content for building your personal brand or business?
You know, that's a really interesting question because I have a different perspective than most because I come from a traditional world. And so I actually realized when I read Shakespeare something really interesting in the world of sports marketing. So I ran a big sports marketing company with Warren Moon. And what I realized was that when Shakespeare wrote Hamlet, when he wrote these amazing works, inside of there, he said one interesting thing. He said, the whole world is your stage, which is really interesting because that's absolutely true for Shakespeare. You can't go anywhere on earth and say, hey, have you ever heard of Shakespeare? And someone said, no, never heard of him. Literally. And but yet thousands of years ago when he wrote those works, people didn't know who he was, especially outside of where he was. And so understanding what content is, and I'm going to give you a little advanced perspective of where it is. Content is so important if and only if it's one of two things. One is if it's your essence. See, Shakespeare wrote it his essence. Most people still can't even understand his essence. It doesn't make sense. It's a difficult read. I still have trouble as much as I want to decipher what he actually meant. It might as well be, you know, Sanskrit sometimes to me. And you take your best guess at what it meant. But it's definitely, when you read Shakespeare, you know it's Shakespeare because it's his essence. Now, that's different than what people talk about authenticity. Authenticity is a brand. A brand can be authentic. Howard Stern, I've been blessed to spend time with Howard Stern. He's very authentic in his content. It's the same. Like you hear these type of jokes, you hear his very authentic, but that's not his essence. When you talk to Howard Stern outside of the Howard Stern show, his essence is completely different. His frequency is different. He just is able to maintain an authentic brand and utilize some of his essence, his skills, his knowledge, and his desire. So when it comes to content, think about this. Your real focus to content, if the whole world is your stage, is capturing the content the same way Shakespeare did. So, and we all have this powerful tool today, like that one, that digi thing.
Camera.
Like, amazing. We can capture content. So it wasn't worried about posting content. That's going to be nothing. Think about this. I've been creating content every day at an enormous pace for over 10 years now. That's built a brand and a community of over a million people, of ambassadors, a million. I want to get to over a billion, but right now I've been doing it by capturing content every single day. I'm going to continue to do that. So 5 years from now, when AI can modify content without hiring anyone, it can amplify it without anyone, and it can create a social silo or perpetuation of that content, what's going to be the distinguishing factor of my content versus most people in the world is that synthesized tool that can aggregate an enormous amount at a quantum level information, and it's only going to improve exponentially. At a quantum level, my content will be able to perpetuate itself in a much higher vibration or frequency because there's so much of it. Whether I posted it or not, whether I'd ever, if all you did was capture content from now until 5 years from now, AI will be extremely valuable to you, but it won't be to someone that decides I should start capturing content now because AI makes it easy to modify it, amplify it, and perpetuate it. That's not gonna help. And so my perspective of content is the same as any other behaviors. Behaviors do three things if you do them every day. They aggregate, accelerate, and compound exponentially. Money, same thing. Aggregates, accelerates, compounds exponentially. And if we utilize the actual physics in the growth that occurs through consistent behavior, which is, by the way, completely aligned with the conscious continuum, that if you look at Gladwell or anyone else that talks about practice, consistent practice, 1,000 reps, why is that? Because your cellular memory only can handle things for 24 hours. That's the increment of life. 24 hours is the increment of life from the time your heart starts till the time it stops. Your life is divided in 24-hour segments. That's guaranteed. That's the only certainty of tomorrow. If anybody else can give me something certain for tomorrow, I know how to make billions of dollars. I'll give mine to charity. You can keep yours. Just tell me what exactly is going to happen tomorrow. Only thing I know that's going to happen tomorrow, unless it's the last day of my life, it's going to be we get 24 hours to do whatever the hell we want to do. And so content is our ability to capture our essence, which eventually will be an ability to modify, amplify, and perpetuate our essence, which will build a community, an energy, a frequency, or a neighborhood. For me, with the intention of building a huge neighborhood of people with the same mission as mine, to help one another and know people to help one another. We're going to buy from each other, sell from each other, for each other. Not just product, services, and solutions. Ideas, gratitude, forgiveness, accountability, things like that.
Awesome. And my second question is, for people trying to grow their business and expand their business, do you think content creation, like posting on Instagram or YouTube, is essential to grow your business?
Depends on what business. So why would we post content? We post content to build a community. Community of people that understand our articulation of value. Value can only be derived in two different ways. Give people more of what they like, take away what they don't like. Give them more of what works, take away what doesn't work. Give them more of what they know or take away what they don't know. So if you have a product, service, or solution and you need a community that utilizes social media, then capturing your content and posting it in your essence and articulating that value is essential. If I'm in a different type of business that doesn't need a community, then it may not behoove you to utilize that as a mechanism for business, but there may be other things that you want to build community around: your faith, your friendships, your associations, a cause, a purpose, a charity. All of those different things, content, the purpose of content is to use the math of frequency. What do I mean by that? Everything has a frequency. And so when I step on stage, and I train a lot of kids on some of them are old people, but how to speak. Here's the danger of that. They step on their first stage for free. There's 100 people in the audience at the Chamber of Commerce or the graduate school or wherever they're speaking. And at the end of the speech, 10 of the 100 people come up to them invariably, and they always will, and they say, "You're amazing. That speech was amazing. In fact, it changed my life. It may have been one of the best speeches I've ever heard." The truth is, it wasn't what they said, it's what they felt. And the reason they felt that way is 10% of the people are usually at your frequency. Now, the 10% that aren't, that you're Tabascoing a wound to, they left. And the other 80% that heard you for the first time and haven't had the repetition in order to feel that, they've left as well. And so you have to be able to understand with content, it does the same thing. The more content we have, the more 10% we get on both sides, so more haters, more lovers, but the consistent, persistent pursuit of whatever essence that is, more and more times, now the person, by the fourth time, all of a sudden, they move into the 10%. Because human beings hate and love one thing: annoying. What's annoying? Repetition and honesty. That's why so many people, the first time you hear someone that's at their essence, you may have a feeling going, "I really didn't like Gary Vee the first time I saw him. Now I love him. I'll stand in line 2 hours to get his picture." Not that he's super handsome like me, but people like his picture. Why? Because of frequency. And how do we know our frequency? Our essence, our frequency, different than authentic. Authentic is a brand. You just have to be consistent with the messaging, communication, look, likeness, etc. But frequency is your essence, your skills, your knowledge, and your desire, all bundled up into who you are. So the more vulnerable you are about who you are, the more people will resonate with you. And guess what? The more people that won't resonate with you, those are my teachers. Those are my protectors. I love when people hate me because I tell them, you know what? Tell everybody why you hate me. Please, I'm keeping this comment here. I want you to go out and tell everyone you think that book sucks, which really did happen, by the way. This lady said I was an idiot on Goodreads because I said you could talk to water, change the molecular structure of water, and she said, "You're an idiot. Don't read the book." Everybody that believed her never read my book. But guess what? They didn't read it, so they didn't tell anyone that they thought it was stupid. But what happened was, because that's a teacher, that's a protector, that's a promoter of mine, all these people that probably wouldn't have given a shit about a book called Connected to Goodness, all of a sudden it said, "Hold on a second. I believe that you could talk to water and change the molecular structure. I'm not an idiot. Fuck you. I'm buying the book. I'm going to like this book. This guy's a genius." Why? Because he believes what I believe. He's at my essence, my frequency. And so we're protected, promoted, loved, and perfected by both sides, the people who love us and the people who hate us. And then it's being annoying, being truthful to ourselves, and projecting that on others in repetition And if anyone here is a parent, you know how annoying we are as parents. What do your kids hate about you? You're repetitive and honest. I also, just a tip as being a parent, for those of you that aren't one or are one, when your kid looks you in the eye when you tell them something for the 50th time, and they look you in the eye and they roll their eye back like you're an idiot, tell them thank you. This is my new thing. My son's 15. He just started the whole rolling the eyes things, right? Because you go from what? Idolization to demonization to humanization as a parent. So he's getting into the demonization side. Everything I say is stupid. I tell him thank you when he rolls his eyes. I'm like, you acknowledge what I said, and now you planted a seed under a tree that I may never sit under. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Great questions, Cody. All right, thank you. Next question. Just as a reminder, this is a meetup. Feel free to come in. The reason I do it, every city I go to, over 200 cities, I give an hour to help people answer questions, make introductions. We have meetups, holding courts. We have a VIP dinner tonight if you want to come. It's going to be at the Gaylord. Tim Story, me, Eddie, Nick. Marshall Faulk's coming, the Hall of Fame running back. So if you guys want to come, it's going to be super cool. See this guy with his microphone in the air. The reason I started doing it is boredom at first. I wake up really early, got my shit done. I travel so much. So I decided instead of sitting in my room watching ESPN, I'd put out a message saying, anyone needs help, meet me for free breakfast. I don't usually stay at fancy hotels, so they're usually free breakfast. And people started showing up. The advantage is I, in 200 cities or more a year, I get to learn what you guys are listening for. I love doing research. So I find commonalities in human nature and the human experience. And I practice articulating what I've learned to hopefully help you get to where you want to be or better. So only works if you have a question. What's your name?
Hi, I'm Kate.
Hi, Kate. I'm David.
Nice to meet you. So I wondered this for a while, and your response to the last questions really sparked it and reminded me. So something I hear a lot and something that I go back and forth with is, how do you find your niche? Like, how do you find your essence? What, you know?
Yeah. So let me tell you how, what people, the same question. How do I find my why? How do I find my essence? How do I find my niche? How am I going to find my purpose? So the thing that's so interesting is, in the paradigm shift for everything in my life, and whether it's religious, spiritual, philosophical, or theoretical, I believe that it stems from faith. So think about this. Most people chase something they're never going to get, and it's called more. We talked about it in the Diamond Lunch, right? If you think money's freedom, you'll never be free. And so if you want more, there's always more. So how are you going to get more? And just put a blank next to it. And so for me, to know the essence is okay. Essence, the purpose, the why, is start from a different paradigm, which protects, promotes, loves, and perfects you, which is faith, that I believe, no matter what religion you are, spirituality, philosophy, or theory you believe in, that the best option to believe is that there is an omniscient, that means all knowing, all information, omnipotent, all powerful source, God, your God, my God, whatever you call it, there's a God that knows everything and has all this energy. What are you doing to interfere with it should be your biggest question. You know your why. Your why is the oneness that exists of all information and all energy. What are you doing to interfere with it? It takes away this pressure of finding my essence, finding my purpose, finding my why. I live my life. I'm 57 years old. I have more energy than I had when I was 25. I have more energy than most 25-year-olds. I know it because I offer young people especially to shadow me any day of the week, and they're always sleeping in my back seat by 3:30. Because I make them shadow me, meaning you're meeting me when I wake up. You're going to watch me meditate, then work out. Don't have to watch me shower, but besides that, you're going to be watching me. Don't have to, I said. Never know. There's some weirdos out there. But more importantly, I have all this energy, not because I'm getting the energy. I'm actually interfering with it less. So in the aspect of knowing your why and your essence, what we want to do is, if I am already, I am happy, I am healthy, I am wealthy, and I am worthy, then what am I doing to interfere with that? Would be a construct of reacting. You were supposed to be my opening act. What happened? I thought you were singing before I went
Hi,
on stage.
Everybody.
American Idol's grand champion.
I don't know. Did you like it?
They moved you back.
They moved me back. I don't know why.
You look gorgeous as usual.
Thank you.
Come here. This is one of my best friends in the world, Darren Prince. Thank you.
I'm not going to make it to your dinner for a little bit.
Tonight? Oh, good. We're right in the building, so that's awesome. To this end, though, this idea of reacting to fear, think about this in the realm of this interference. So I've spent millions of dollars dealing with fear, trauma, all of these different things, therapy, personal development, professional development, millions of dollars to try to improve myself, try to figure out how do I deal with my trauma consciously, subconsciously, in the conscious continuum, in a competency, an unconscious competency that I have, my DNA, epigenetic DNA, from nutrition and water and sleep and all these different areas. And what I realized was it's so multivariable, I could never figure out what my true trauma is applicable to my why, purpose, or the interference that I'm creating. So I have a hack. This changed my life. Not only the paradigm shift that I'm faithful, there's something bigger than me that loves me, protects me, promotes me more than my mom, what am I doing to interfere with it, but actually in the construct of what is interference. When you are afraid, when trauma presents itself from the subconscious or unconscious mind, we react to it. That's truly what the ego, the mechanism in human nature of the ego, is to protect us by reacting in a certain way to fear or trauma. And this is where we get confused in purpose and essence and why. Here's the interesting thing is, instead of worrying about what the trauma is or the fear is, simply look at the instant and obvious that's getting in your way. It's the reaction to fear, the need to be right, the need to be offended, the need to be separate, inferior, superior, anxious, frustrated, angry, guilty, worried. Anybody ever have these things happen in their lives? Of course you have. Imagine if you took all the time, energy, emotion, and money you wasted on worrying and put it to a charity. That'd be beautiful, wouldn't it? So what I say is I'm in the practice of looking for the clues of how I most likely react to fear. And then use the only certainty of the future, which is the 24-hour increment that we're given to have purpose, to apply our why, in the respect of why should I spend more than an hour and a half worrying? Why not try to shorten the distance of resistance through wisdom and faith? So all I do is, for example, when I'm pissed off, anybody here ever been pissed off? I get pissed off every day. I worry every day. I'm anxious every day. I have a terrible need to be offended, by the way. And it happens every day. But instead of spending days, weeks, months, and years aggregating, accelerating, and compounding the interference towards where I don't want to be, I simply utilize my faith and I say, I feel angry and I really don't give a shit why anymore. It's not because the guy cut me off. I know that. There's some sort of thing going on in me that I now have to feel superior because I've never made a mistake or cut anybody else off. And or maybe I'm projecting my insecurity that I'm a terrible driver and I cut a whole bunch of other people off. So now I'm going to project that insecurity onto the guy that cut me off. It doesn't fucking matter. Excuse my language. All I care about is I'm angry. So instead of resisting it like I used to do, trying to out-logic an emotion, which is mathematically and physically impossible, you can't out-logic or analyze an emotion. If anyone's gone to school and worried about a test, how many times did you say, let it go, it'll be fine? Didn't work, did it? You woke up fucking shitting your pants again going, oh God, the test is this morning, I'm not ready, I'm still worried. Because logic doesn't work. You can't resist it, go over it, under it, through it, around it. Stop lying to it, cheating it, manipulating it, and denying it. Instead, have complete faith, even though there's no evidence and the evidence is contrary to this reaction that you're having. So just simply stop. That's the only action you should have to your reaction. Stopping, because stopping is a faithful movement. Being still is a faithful movement. And so when we stop and breathe and drop, we are actually recollecting, reminding, and remembering our faith of something all-knowing and all-powerful. And now we can apply our why again. Why? Because there's no interference between us and our why. Yeah. And we don't have to put some man-made constructs of logic around my purpose is to do this. My purpose is not to empower over a billion people. That's my mission. That's a mission. My purpose is to shorten the distance of resistance that I create from the all-knowing and all-powerful. That seems good enough for me. Because I know the more I access, I've actually been doing this 18 years. And the interesting thing is I used to spend so much time shortening the distance of resistance. Now I've actually gotten to a point that there's so much energy and so much information that I receive that I actually have to practice regulating it into its appropriate usage for the man-made construct, the human experience, the 24 hours of incremental time that I'm given every day, and utilizing in non-negotiable and negotiable behavior, prioritizing all of the different things in my life that are important to me, not you, not what's missing, and not what I don't have. Great question.
Thank you. That was amazing.
You're amazing. Thank you. All right, next question. Nick, who's up?
I work in a detox. People coming off meth,
yep.
No alcohol. They're in a bad state. A lot of them are suicidal. And it's my job to try to get through to them, try to trigger them to want to get better. It's usually that's a trick, making them want to get better. I was wondering if you had any suggestions for that.
I love it. So the question is, how do we make people want to get better when they're not well? There's a great question. Well, first of all, let me tell you that you can't make somebody do anything. Can't make them change, can't make them want to do anything. If anyone has a four-year-old, it's that it's true state of mind. Try to get a four-year-old to do what you want. So what we have to do is understand and utilize the best mechanism that we know, which is to meet people where they are and use questions and suggestions in order to facilitate their own understanding of self and allow them to elevate their awareness to they want to move in a certain direction away from the self-sabotage, the dis-ease that they have. Because nothing's going to happen unless they want it. And you can't make somebody want it. You will just create more resistance if you try to. So for me, I use an open-ended question system to help people align with where they are at and give them suggestions and more questions so that they can work their way to a point where they want to themselves. So this works in sales, by the way, exactly the same. So let's start again. Remember, value can be only derived in two ways: giving someone more of what they like or taking away what they don't like. Giving them more of what works, taking away what doesn't work. Giving them more of what they know or taking away what they don't know. So I address every situation, whether it's sales or some sort of construct to help somebody get to where they want to be or better, by using open-ended questions to facilitate suggestions and more questions so that they come to a logical conclusion that's aligned with where they want to be or better. So I may say to them, how do you feel? Why do you feel that way? What is it that makes you feel that way? What are some of the things that are working when you don't feel that way? What are some of the things that don't work when you feel that way? Would it help you if, and then I also empower them, hey, do you know someone that can help me? Why? We talked on stage about the infinite loop of giving. When we ask someone for help, there's an entirely different mindset of empowerment that occurs. And so if you take someone that is projecting their insecurity because they need your help and you ask them for help, it actually changes the perspective of their ability to be helped as well. So I love to take people through a journey of questions and suggestions, an open-minded, open question of, hey, tell me more of what you like. What's not working for you? Would it help you if? Do you know anyone that can help me? This conversation keeps going with sessions and questions. All of a sudden, they start asking me questions. Well, what does that look like? Well, it's hard. You know, I have this 1,000-step rule that, look, I know you want to do this. You're telling me you want to do it, but it's 1,000 steps to get there. And here's the bad part about it. I can't tell you how long it's going to take you to take all 1,000 steps. And here's what's worse. Some of the steps are bigger. Some are slippery. Some are broken. Some are dirty. You're going to have to sometimes take 5 steps backwards to get 10 steps forward. And I can't guarantee any of this. But what I can tell you, that if you want to get to here, it's 1,000 steps, and it's going to take you everything you get, everything you got, everything that you want to get to 250 steps, and most people quit. It won't be the mistakes that you make along the way. It won't be the slips that you have when you slip in alcoholism or drug use. That's not going to stop you. It's going to be your lack of commitment. Common denominator of all successful people, the billionaires, millionaires, entrepreneurs, celebrities, athletes, entertainers at the highest level, world renowned that I know, all have what I was born with, a desire that I must be what I can be. I am not a quitter. People ask me all the time, how the hell do you come back from losing all that money? I'm not a quitter. I don't care. if I'm only at 250 steps and I feel like I'm never going to get there. That's just telling me I am going to get there. I just got to keep on. Why do people line up for David Goggins? Why do you think they put him last? Because that's the frequency of David Goggins. I don't care if my knees are broken. I'm still going to run a marathon, and you can't even run a marathon on great knees. But I can. Why? Because he doesn't lack commitment. That's all. He knows he's protected, promoted, loved, and perfected, that he can only reach his potential by clearing the interference between him and his God. That's how he does it. I do the same thing in life, but I'm not willing to go run marathons on broken knees.